We live in a world with other people. That's pretty obvious, isn't it? Some people may just be friends, other people we don't know. But obviously we have family. And we want to have the best relationship with family we can possibly have. Your relationship might be that of being a parent, a grandparent, a child, a spouse. How can you be the best parent, the best child, grandparent, or spouse? We can preach about how that you should be a certain kind of a child. Children, obey your parents. Or how that you should be a certain kind of a parent or a certain kind of a spouse. That, you know what, you should be this for your wife or this for your husband. And we talk about those interrelationships that we have. And so we can emphasize all day long, we can incorporate psychology and look at the latest studies and find out, you know, hey, this is what's going to really make this closely knit family. And this is what's going to really make this fantastic marriage. You know, if you have enough money and money's not a problem, that's going to work because money is the biggest, one of the biggest issues, they say. And so we try to figure out how we can best have relationships one with another. But we need to be challenged about getting first things first. And how that you can best have a relationship with any other individual in the world, including those in your immediate family. And that is based upon a relationship with somebody else. This is very simple. Because we're talking about biblical principles of parenting. And so what you're expecting is, let's talk about, you know, let's get the rod out. Or let's talk about this or that or the other when it comes to children. And, you know, they really bug me when I go to Walmart and they're lying on the floor screaming and mom and dad are just not knowing what to do and so forth. Let's hear about that. First things first. Ephesians chapter 5. Back in 1981, what is that, 32 years ago, I was leading the drama team from Bob Jones, and we were traveling in the West. We were headed west, and we got to Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it was on our rest day. Our rest day was on Mondays, and we had the van that says Bob Jones University on the side of it, and we were driving around Tulsa, you know, going to get our meal and so forth, went to our motel. That's where we were. Meantime, my parents were living in Wichita, Kansas. My dad was the teacher for the home builders class there in Wichita, the young married couples. I say that because I'm going to go back to Tulsa now where we were traveling. We were in the motel that evening, and there was a knock on the door. And I opened the door, and there was this man who looked familiar, but I just wasn't sure I'd ever met him before. And he said, "Are you one of the guys from that Bob Jones team? I see your van out there." I said, "Well, yeah." He said, "I'm looking for Dan Unruh." And I was like, "That's me." And he said, "My name is such and such. I was in your dad's home builders class. Can we talk?" And so I invited him into the motel room, and he said, "I was driving here in Tulsa, and this Bob Jones van went by. And he said, I knew that Del Unruh's son was a student of Bob Jones. So I thought, I'm going to follow this van." And he followed the van to the motel. When he got to the motel, he was going to ask if they knew me. And it was me standing there. And he came in, and he just kind of sunk his head into his hands and said, "I've been in your dad's class. My wife wants to divorce me. I'm living in Tulsa. I don't know what to do." "Well, I haven't even been married yet." Here's this guy asking his early 20s, you know, about his marriage and what he should do. And I just, you know how, have you ever prayed with your eyes open when you're talking to somebody? Well, I was praying. And I just said, let's start here. Let's forget about your relationship with your wife. Let me ask you something. What about your relationship with the Lord? Let's start there. And I challenged him about that. We didn't talk about the wife and the kids or anything. I said, let's make sure this is right. When that is right, then I think the Lord will take care of the other. We met that night. We prayed together. He left. It was probably 3-4 months later. I know I was back at Bob Jones for my continuing education. And I was talking to my dad on the phone one night. He said, oh, by the way, did you ever meet such and such? He gave me the name and I didn't remember the name. And he said, but you talked to him in a motel in Tulsa. I said, oh, yeah, I remember that. He said he's back with his family. And he said, here's what he told me. He said that night when you told him that you need to make sure your relationship with the Lord is right, he said it hit me like a ton of bricks. He said he got right with the Lord. Once he got right with the Lord, he was able to get right with his wife. It was of the Lord that he brought that to mind. That our relationship with him is paramount. You know, you may be having problems with your children. You say, my problem is my kids. Let me ask you first of all, what is your relationship like with the Lord? Well, I'm having problems with my mom and dad. I don't like what they're doing. I don't like what they're asking me to do. Hey, let me ask you something, child. What's your relationship with the Lord like? Start there. If your relationship is right with God, then you can then approach other relationships. You have a problem with somebody in this church? You have a problem with me? Do I have a problem? My first question ought to be, what's my relationship with the Lord like? Then I can talk to that other individual. Now you say, where are you getting this from? Let's start with Ephesians chapter 5, because we're going to look here at what the Lord is saying through the Apostle Paul. I remember talking to a family some years ago, right here in Greeley. They started to come to our church probably in the late 90s. And their big thing was rodeo. Everything was rodeo, rodeo, rodeo. They lived for rodeo. And in talking with them, I knew that that was the first thing. And that was affecting their relationship with the Lord. What is your first thing? What is your priority? My challenge this morning is first things first. If your relationship with God is not right, let me ask you this. Is it possible for your relationship with your spouse to be right? If your relationship with God is not right, is it possible for your relationship to be right with your children? Now, how would you describe your relationship with God? You've heard that question, haven't you? There's two things regarding your relationship with God, and we're going to see it here in Ephesians chapter 5 and 6. Here's the first thing regarding your relationship with God, your belief. Your belief. And I want you to see the order of command given here in these two chapters, Ephesians 5 and 6. We're not going to read the entire chapters. I just want to point something out to you, because the proper order of our relationships is found by the order in which Paul addresses his audience. Who does he first address here in chapter 5 and verse 1? What is the relationship here? Who is he concerned about your relationship with here? Verse 1 of chapter 5. Be therefore followers of God. Look at verses 19 to 21. Speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord, giving thanks always for all things unto God and the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Number one, the order of command has to do with your relationship with God. That's number one. After Paul addresses that in chapter 5 and verse 1 and the following verses, he's talking about in verse 2, walk in love as Christ also hath loved us, and so forth and so on. Then he begins to address another pair of relationships or another set of relationships later on in that chapter. What is the relationships he is talking about in verses 22 to verse 33? After he's talked about your relationship with God, number 2 is your spouse. But first, what is your relationship with God like? Then you can talk about your relationship with your spouse. And that's what he begins with in verse 22. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Later on, he addresses the men. Verse 25, husbands, love your wife. So now he talks about the husband-wife relationship. But number one is what? My relationship with my God. Then number two, my relationship with my spouse. Let's do that again. Number one is my relationship with my Number two is my relationship with my. But then after he talks about the spouse, the husband and the wife, he gets to chapter 6. And who's he addressing now? Verse 1. Children. So you see the order of the command here. Number one is my relationship with my. Number two is my relationship with my. Number three is my relationship with my children. Do you get that, folks? We have this turned around. We think that I've got to have a right relationship with my kids and I'm going to really work on that. You got it out of whack. I've got to really work on my relationship with my spouse. You do, but what's number one? My relationship with my God. Then you get to verses 5-9 of chapter 6, and now you've got your relationship with my employer or my employee. I'm having problems at work. I don't have a good relationship with my boss. Let me ask you something. What's your relationship like with God? Because then when your relationship with God is right, then you can respond to your employer or to other employees. But number one is my relationship with my. Then number two is my relationship with my. Number three is my relationship with my. And number four, with my employer. Folks, don't forget that. This is foundational to this whole series on biblical principles of parenting. It's my relationship with my God. C.S. Lewis once said, "When I have learnt to love God better than my earthly dearest, I shall love my earthly dearest better than I do now." Insofar as I learn to love my earthly dearest at the expense of God and instead of God, I shall be moving towards the state in which I shall not love my earthly dearest at all. When first things are put first, second things are not suppressed, but increased. Your relationship with God, what is your belief? Do you believe in the order of the command here? And secondly, do you believe in the order of creation? Who instituted marriage? Who instituted the family? God instituted both of those. But He first created man. If you got an argument with that, go to Paul's epistle to Timothy, his first epistle, chapter 1. God created man to have relationship with Him. Then God established the institution of marriage. Then, after the institution of marriage, then He established the institution of the family. This is foundational. You must have your relationships in order. Let me ask you something. Can an unsaved parent fulfill God's purpose in rearing a child? If a parent's unsaved, is he really fulfilling God's purpose in his own life? So if I cannot fulfill God's purpose in my life as an unsaved person, then how can I fulfill God's purpose in another person's life? I know God may use me, even as He used wicked kings to accomplish what He wanted to in Israel, for example. But I really cannot fulfill God's purpose in somebody else's life if I am not first allowing Him to fulfill His purpose in my life. Because how can I lead someone else where I myself have not gone? How can an unsaved parent fulfill verse 4 of chapter 6? Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. How can an unsaved parent bring up his children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? It's got to start with having a right relationship with God. So that's what I'm talking about when I'm talking about your belief, the order of the command and the order of creation. Now, the rest of the time this morning, I'm going to spend on the second point, and that's your behavior. Where in the world can you go to be yourself? Where are you most yourself? Are you more yourself here when you gather with other believers? Are you more yourself when you're in school? Where do you go to really be yourself? You know, people talk about facades and being transparent and so forth. Where can you really be transparent? In fact, where are you most transparent? Yeah. It's at the home. So if I were to say, who are you? I would know it by your behavior at home. How you talk, what you talk about, who you talk about, what you do, what you don't do. That's the real you. The real you is what you are at home, and the real you should be godly. Go to Psalm 101. We're done with Ephesians for now. Go to Psalm 101. Note what the psalmist says in verse 2. Psalm 101, verse 2. I will behave myself wisely in a perfect way. O, when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. Well, that's where we say, I'm going to let it all hang out. And that's where I'm going to just let everything go, is in my house. No, that's where the psalmist says, that's where I am going to walk with a perfect heart. Are you putting on a facade? Are you putting on another face here that is not your real face? And the solution some people have to that is, well, I'm just going to let it all hang out. I'm going to start being transparent. I'm just going to let everything go. No, that's not the solution. The solution is to get it right with God. So if you're putting on a facade here, don't say, I just need to start letting it hang out. Get right. Look at verse 1. Psalm 101. I will sing of mercy and judgment unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. Here's what you need to determine is going to be right in your home. Number one, what you sing. What you sing. I will sing of mercy and judgment unto thee, O Lord, will I sing. Number two, what you see. Look at verse 3 of Psalm 101. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. What's going to help you walk with a perfect heart in your house? What you sing, what you see. Thirdly, verse 5, what you say, whoso privily slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. Him that hath an high look and a proud heart, will not I suffer. Remember those three things. If you're going to walk in your house with a perfect heart, watch what you sing, what you see, and what you say. Your children know you better than anyone else. Charles Spurgeon said this, we must have a perfect heart at home or we cannot keep a perfect way abroad. Do you sing in the choir and sin in the chamber? Are you a saint abroad and a devil at home? For shame, what we are at home, that we are indeed. He cannot be a good king whose palace is the haunt of vice. Nor he a true saint whose habitation is a scene of strife. Nor he a faithful minister whose household dreads his appearance at the fireside. How many of you know who I'm talking about when I talk about John Lennon? If I say the Beatle John Lennon. John Lennon had a son by the name of Julian. Julian Lennon was abandoned by his father, the Beatle John Lennon, when he was 5 years old. And do you remember what John Lennon and the whole Beatles were singing about all the time? Peace and love and so. Let me give you this quote by Julian Lennon. Abandoned by Beatle John Lennon when he was 5 years old. When Julian was 35, he said this about Dad. I felt he was a hypocrite. Dad could talk about peace and love out loud to the world, but he could never show it to the people who supposedly meant the most to him, his wife and son. How can you talk about peace and love and have a family in bits and pieces? No communication, adultery, divorce. You can't do it. Not if you're being true and honest with yourself. Your behavior. I'm going to give two examples this morning. Eli and Israel. Two examples. When you think of Eli, the priest, what do you think of? Go with me to 1 Samuel chapter 1. This is where you're first introduced to this priest. Because of a young mother by the name, not a mother at the time, but a young woman by the name of Hannah. But you get to know more about Eli in chapter 2. And here's the one thing I want you to remember about Eli. Eli was more concerned about his relationship with his children than he was about his relationship with God. So how do you think his kids turned out? Look at 1 Samuel 2:29. God comes to Eli through a man of God, verse 27, and he begins to speak. So God is speaking through this man of God in verse 29, and he says, "Wherefore, Eli, kick ye at my sacrifice and at mine offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, and honorest thy sons above me." There it is. What kind of a family is it where the parents honor the children above God? You talk about a family that's messed up. That's what happens when the children are honored above God. Listen, how can you honor your kids before you do God? When you say, "I love my kids so much I could never spank them," then you don't love your kids. You're honoring your kids above God because God is the one who in the book of Proverbs talks about corporal punishment or discipline. Eli, you honor your sons above me. Go to chapter 3, look at verse 13. "I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile," and what did he do about it? He wouldn't restrain them. Eli just let him go. Eli really did not have much of a relationship with God as much as Eli had a relationship with objects related to God. What was the main object that the children of Israel carried around with them? The Ark of the Covenant. And you talk about a man having a relationship with an object, it was Eli. Do you remember the story, what took place? The children of Israel went out to fight the Philistines, and something got captured. Look at chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. "And the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle and pitched beside Ebenezer, and the Philistines pitched in Aphek. And the Philistines put themselves in array against Israel, and when they joined battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines, and they slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men. And when the people were come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, 'Wherefore hath the Lord smitten us today before the Philistines? Let us fetch the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh among us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies.'" Let me ask you something. What was Israel's relationship like with God? It was only as much as their relationship with an object that represented God to them. Do people have relationships with things and objects that may tell us of God or represent something about God more than they have a relationship with God? You may have a relationship with a church, but not with Christ. You may have a Bible, but not a bond. You may have a relic, but not a relationship. You may have some bone fragment from some supposed saint years ago, as many people like to gather today, or some piece of wood from the cross, or you may have some kind of a statue or something. And that's what people think of their relationship with God. If I have this, and if I carry my Bible around under my arm, that somehow this is going to make me spiritual. See? Now you see the halo. Now you don't. And that's really the way we operate. If I've got my Bible in my arms, then somehow I'm spiritual. And we have a relationship with objects rather than with God Himself. Israel foolishly assumed that there was some kind of magical power with them via the ark instead of acknowledging the God of the ark. Folks, they were literally superstitious. And we do have a lot of superstitious Christians in the way they operate. Our youth pastor, when I was in high school, would challenge us to take our Bible to public school. "Hey, carry your Bible." So I would carry my Bible. And I thought, you know what, if I'm going to have my Bible, I'm not going to put it on top of my math book. I hate my math book. I'm going to put the Bible on top. It's going to be on top of the history. So it's going to be on top. So all the other students saw it. And it opened up many opportunities for witness. But you know what? It didn't matter so much as to where the Bible was placed on my books as to where it was placed in my heart. And that was really the issue. You know, I might have it in my hands, but do I have it in my heart? "Thy word have I hid in mine heart, that I might not sin against thee." That's where it needs to be. There's this movie that came out years ago called The Raiders of the Lost Ark, and it exhibits man's continuing interest in objects. Objects that we revere today. What are some of the objects that you revere, that people revere today? Superstitious, kind of religious objects. Even you. What are some of those objects? You know, some people like to wear a cross, you know, and that's okay. Or a bracelet, WWJD, you know. Or a plaque in their home, a statue on the dashboard of their car. People are enthralled with objects of Christianity. It's just like during this day. They substitute objects for a relationship. Look at verse 8, chapter 4. Here's what the Philistine said. Woe unto us! Who shall deliver us out of the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness. Why are they saying this? Because they see the Ark of the Covenant coming. And they see all of a sudden that the children of Israel have this enthusiasm. They've been worked up because now they've got the Ark with them. And so all of a sudden they're religiously fervent. And it's scaring the Philistines. In other words, Israel had given the impression to others that their power was due to an object rather than what the object represented. But here's something that's interesting about objects. Look at verse 11. The Ark of God was taken. What is it? What's the truth about objects, folks? It can be taken away. It can be stolen. Question, what happens when your Bibles are taken away? What happens when you can't find your bracelet that has the cross or that necklace? Is that the extent of your Christianity? Israel had given the impression to others that their power was due to an object rather than to a relationship. What are we trying to say here, folks? Eli had a relationship not with God, but with an object. In fact, when he heard that the object had been stolen and the children of Israel had been defeated, what happened to Eli? He was so overcome that he fell backward and killed himself. Not committing suicide, he was a heavy man, and because of that, he fell and he died. Because he heard that the object had been stolen. A relationship is something that comes from the heart. It is not something that, oh, I've got this plaque in my house that says, as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. Now, that's fine if you have that. In fact, I wouldn't mind having that. But if that's the extent of your Christianity, you're in trouble. There's the example of Eli. First things first? No, he had third things first. His relationship with his kids. And then there's the example of Israel. Here's the second and the last example that I want to give you. Did Israel fear God? They did. But their downfall was in how they feared God. They feared Him through objects, which really is not a fear of the Lord. Let's jump ahead. Hundreds of years, here we are in 1 Samuel. They don't even have a king yet. But let's jump ahead to the end of Israel's history, the Northern Kingdom's history, to 2 Kings chapter 17. Here is a summary given of Israel and their relationship with God. My question is, did Israel fear God? The answer is yes, but how did they fear Him? If I were to ask you again without having answered that question, did Israel fear God? You may have said, well, no, they didn't. But I want you to look at 2 Kings 17, verse 32. What are the first five words? So they feared the Lord. So they feared the Lord. Now, let's look and see how they feared the Lord. And made unto themselves of the lowest of them priests of the high places, which sacrificed for them in the houses of the high places. They feared the Lord and served their own gods. Stop. They feared God and served their own gods. Is it possible for you to fear God and serve false gods? Apparently so. After the manner of the nations whom they carried away from thence, unto this day they do after the former manners. They fear not the Lord. Now wait, here we got conflicting statements. They fear the Lord, and yet they do not fear the Lord. Neither do they after their statutes, or after their ordinances, or after the law and commandment which the Lord commanded the children of Jacob, whom He named Israel. They would have said, in other words, we fear God. But by what they didn't fear Him. Verse 35. With whom the Lord had made a covenant and charged them, saying, ye shall not fear other gods. We're going to be looking at that tonight. Nor bow yourselves to them, nor serve them, nor sacrifice them. But the Lord who brought you up out of the land of Egypt with great power and a stretched out arm, him shall ye fear, and him shall ye worship, and to him shall ye do sacrifice. And the statutes, and the ordinances, and the law, and the commandment which he wrote for you, ye shall observe to do forever, and ye shall not fear the other gods. How is it known whether you fear God or not? It's by whether you keep his word. They did not keep his word. And as much as they'd like to talk about the fact that they fear God, they didn't. Verse 38, in the covenant that I made with you, ye shall not forget, neither shall ye fear other gods. But the Lord your God ye shall fear, and he shall deliver you out of the hand of all your enemies. Howbeit, they did not hearken, but they did after their former manner. Now let me ask you something. Did their relationship with God affect their children? The way that they feared God, did that affect their children? After all, we're talking about biblical principles of parenting. And after all, we're talking about the fact that your relationship with God is number one. So let's bring it right down to the example of Israel. Did the way they feared God affect their children? Well, I left one verse out. What's the last verse? Verse 41. So these nations feared the Lord and served their graven images, both their children and their children's children, as did their fathers. So do they unto this day. As did their fathers. Folks, your children will do what you do, even if you teach them differently. It does not matter what you say. It matters what you do. The gods that you fail to conquer in your life will be the gods your children serve. That's illustrated in Psalm 78, verses 5 through 8. For he established a testimony in Jacob, and appointed a law in Israel, which he commanded our fathers, that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments, and might not be as their fathers, a stubborn and rebellious generation, a generation that set not their heart aright and whose spirit was not steadfast with God. They should make them known to their children. Let me ask you this question. Who has more influence in the life of a child? You or God? Who has more influence in the life of a child? The parent or God? There's this poll that was taken of 272,400 middle school children and high school students. And the respondents ranked parents as the most important influence in their lives and religion as second. Now, I know this is among unsaved. But who do you think they think has more influence in their life? The parents do. We blame all kinds of things for marital breakups, including incompatibility. Well, we're just not compatible. Well, that statement, we're not compatible, that's a selfish statement. It's not a scriptural statement. Compatibility is a choice. Because if you are compatible with God, you would be compatible with each other. Think about it. If mom and dad were each compatible with God, could this happen? 1 John 1:7. We usually apply this to the fellowship in a church. Let's apply this to the fellowship in marriage. If we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another. 1 John 1:7. So when it comes right down to it, incompatibility with the spouse is due to incompatibility with God, having a poor relationship with God. But we not only blame incompatibility, we also blame income. Well, we don't have enough money, so that's what starts a bunch of fights. Let's look to even what the world says about that. Quote, since financial pressures are often a factor in marital breakdowns, you might guess that people who have plenty of money are better able to maintain stable marriages. However, research showed that compared to peers who were in the lower or middle income brackets, baby boomers who had higher incomes were 2.2 times more likely to have been divorced. Those who had moved from a low income category to upper incomes were 3.7 times more likely to have been divorced. The study showed that those who went to church regularly were 2.5 times less likely to have been divorced than those who did not attend. So if you were just to listen to a study, even that study would show that what is more important? Your relationship to money, or your relationship with each other, or your relationship with God? In closing, go with me to Psalm 127. You were hopefully with me in Psalm 78. Let's go to 127. You know this first verse. You probably have it memorized without even knowing that you have it memorized. Psalm 127, verse 1. Except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. Who is supposed to be building the house? The Lord must build your house. Otherwise, you're doing it in vain. If you do not have a right relationship with God, He is not building it. You are. And if you're building your own house, you are making a mess of it. Guaranteed. Folks, if He is going to build it, you must be surrendered to Him. And if you're surrendered to Him, you're going to follow His instructions. You're going to follow His word. Remember this, those of you who are single, in your search for a mate. Surrender to God, number one. My relationship with God is number one. If you're going to find the right mate, you had better make sure that your relationship with God is right first. Tell you something, if your relationship with God is right and you're walking closely with Him as you're searching for a mate, He's going to guide and He's going to help you. Have discernment when it comes up to some person who's, wow. 5 years later, I didn't know this about her or him. Hey, if you've been walking with God, you probably would have known those things about him or her. You know why? Because a child or a young person who's walking with God will go to mom and dad, will go to pastors, will go to other spiritual leaders and say, what do you think about? And then when the parents say, you know what? She's not good for you, or he's not good for you. If you're walking with God as you ought, and you're obeying your parents as you ought, you're going to take their word. You're going to take their advice and say, you know what? Lucille, I'm sorry, it's over. Horace, we're done. Because except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. And if you don't submit to authority, as a husband, little wonder that your wife doesn't either. And wife, if you don't submit to the authority of your husband and to other authorities in your life, why are you wondering about why your children aren't submitted to you? They're simply following your example that you don't know how to submit. Where do children come from? You're in Psalm 127. Look at verse 3. Children come from where? They're a heritage of the Lord. Folks, your children don't belong to you. And they don't belong to the village either. Who do they belong to? They belong to the Lord. Children are an heritage of the Lord. So then what does that make you as a parent? That makes you His agent in their lives. And a home where the fear of God is makes a happy home. Here we are in Psalm 127. Let's go to 128. Psalm 128. Blessed is everyone that feareth the Lord, that walketh in His ways. For thou shalt eat the labor of thine hands. Happy shalt thou be, and it shall be well with thee. Thy wife shall be as a fruitful vine by the sides of thy house. Thy children like olive plants round about thy table. Behold, that thus shall the man be blessed that feareth the Lord. And you know what's going to be likely if that's the kind of a home you live in? Verse 6. You shall see thy children's children and peace upon Israel. How would you describe your relationship with God? What is your relationship with God like? I'm not asking you, what is your relationship like with your spouse this morning? I'm not even asking you what your relationship is like with your children. And children, I'm not asking you what your relationship is like with your parents. I'm asking you this morning, what is your relationship like with God? Because first things first, would you bow your heads? What is your relationship like with God? How would you describe your relationship with God? I'm talking not only to the unsaved this morning, I'm talking to believers. How would you describe your relationship with God? There are some here who need to recognize that your fellowship with God has been broken by sin and that it can only be restored through Jesus Christ and full dependence in Him. But there are also believers here who, having depended upon the Lord for their salvation, have backslidden and are this morning putting other things before God. You may be a parent putting your children before God. You're like Eli. You may be a child putting your mom and dad before God. Your relationship with your spouse may not be right. But it all starts with, what is your relationship like with God? Are you right with God? Is your heart right with God? Father, I pray that our relationship with You would be first and foremost. Lord, there may be some seated in front of me who have heard this message and they're wondering about the problems they're having at home, but not even considering about the problems that they're having in their heart. And I pray that they would get that right with You this morning. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.